her shirt, the sheath that hung at her hilt. She wore golden ornaments in her long Assyrian red hair, which was combed and styled. "Cheska," Calder said by way of greeting, "did I miss my invitation to the ball?" She swept him an elegant curtsy, pulling out imaginary skirts.
"Captain Martin, welcome to my ship."
She spoiled the manners by grinning.
"I know I look good. You don't have to say it."
"I'm still trying to get over the shock of seeing you clean. What's the occasion?" She tipped her hat to one side to scratch her head.
"Naberius should have told you. It's an emergency meeting of the powers that be."
It seemed Calder should have pressed the chronicler for more information. "The who?"
"His sponsors, he'd say. We were planning on meeting up after you nabbed the heart, but we got word there was some trouble. I ran on ahead so I wouldn't miss anything."
Calder glanced over the deck of the Eternal. It didn't look like a vessel prepared for battle. If anything, it looked more scrubbed and tailored than its captain. Like the Testament, it was an awakened ship, so most of its deck was made of a single, seamless, fused piece of wood. But where Calder's ship was tinged dark green, this wood was a burnt reddish-orange all the way up the mast to the bright red sails. The two navigator ships had sailed away from Nekuthi's island as soon as possible. The day afterward, when land was out of view, Cheska had called for Calder to join her. The two ships now drifted a few dozen yards apart, the watchmen on both vessels calling back and forth to one another. Cheska pulled the hat off and turned it in her hands, staring at it as though it contained the secrets of the future.
I'm sorry Jerry couldn't be here. I was looking forward to what she'd say after she saw me all made up.
Thinking of his wife caused too many emotions for him to deal with at one time, so he nodded and changed the subject. So, where are we meeting these friends of yours? The Navigator's Guild head walked over to the railing, leaning over the water. She pulled a compass out, looked at it, checked the sky, wet one finger in her mouth and stuck it up to measure the wind, then nodded.
"Here's good,"
she said. Calder looked around. Other than the peaks of a few distant islands, nothing but blue in every direction. This is the middle of nowhere.
Might as well be here then, don't you think?
That made as much sense as anything else Cheska had ever told him. Guildhead, please, I've been playing with half a hand this whole time. Tell me honestly, who are we meeting today? She considered that for a moment, before shaking her head.
Nope.
I'm begging you, Captain Bennett. Formality had never worked on Cheska before, but maybe this time it would give him some kind of an edge.
Nah, it's too much fun letting you stew.
She put her compass back into her jacket, and then pulled out a watch from the same pocket.
Besides, they'll be here soon.
Calder scanned the horizon again. This time, he saw three dark spots that might have just been sails. It'll take them all afternoon, he protested. She walked away, waving a crew member over.
Then I suggest you get ready, Captain. They want you at the meeting. Now that I let you know, my job's over.
With that, she swept off, her massive hat clearing the way for her to cross the deck. That was usually his experience dealing with Cheska. She ran him over, moving like a whirlwind, and then moved on before he could get his bearings. He sighed and looked for someone to row him back to his ship. Back on the Testament, Calder dug through his chest of clothes, wincing as he knelt without thinking on his wounded leg. He shifted his weight to the knee that wasn't bleeding through its bandages, pushing aside one outfit after another. He didn't have anything that his mother would have called suitable, but he should be able to present the image of a proud, hard-working navigator captain. His hand rested on folded layers of black at the bottom. Maybe? He turned the coat over so that the Black Watch crest was visible. Through the fabric, he could feel the lines of the seven iron spikes, sensing the power of their intent in his fingertips. His mother and the Black Watch would be involved in this meeting, and Alsa had suggested that Bliss would be back soon. Maybe he didn't want to represent the navigators now. The watchmen had responded with surprising respect when they learned who he was. They might let him back in. In the first place, he had only retired from the watch on an imperial order. Now that the Emperor was dead, who cared what guild he supported? Maybe he wanted to show the Black Watch that he was still one of them, still on their side, still dedicated to protecting the Empire from elder threats. Only 2 years before, he'd found a tailor to adjust the coat, so he knew it still fit. Or maybe he just wanted to feel connected to the life he used to have, so briefly, before he'd made so many mistakes. Living with his mother back in the capital, studying every day with Jerry. He lifted the coat out of the chest, and a bundle of green silk tumbled out. Calder's eyes stuck to the emerald fabric. It wasn't any clothing, not yet, just a few yards of silk they'd picked up from a trader in Vendenas. Jerry had meant to have it turned into a dress once they had time off in the capital. This was her plan for the future, a treat that she had been saving for herself. It seemed obvious now that he thought of it, but for some reason it hit him like a brick to the side of the head. She hadn't meant to leave. He'd felt betrayed, abandoned by her when he found out that she had been keeping secrets from him. Not just any secrets, he thought. She's one of the Sleepless. She's a soulbound and she never told me. But she'd planned to stay with him, to keep living with him. For some reason, that fact alone seemed like a monstrous revelation. She may have been lying to him, but she had wanted to stay, and now it was too late. It was over, and it was his fault. When Andal came in a moment later, he found Calder sitting motionless, leaning his back against the bed, staring at the green silk lying untouched in the chest. I left her, Andal, he said, his voice a monotone. Why did I leave her? Andal took in the scene at a glance, adapting quickly. He lowered himself to sit on a bench. You didn't leave her, sir. You tried to trap the consultant and find her. It was the best lead you had, and you followed it. Against my advice, I might add. That sounded good when he put it like that, but it didn't feel like enough. He should have run straight after her, not played a game of wait and see. He hadn't had any idea where to go or what to do, but at the moment that felt like the flimsy excuse of a child caught in a lie. But none of that was Andal's fault. Andal was always a clear voice of reason, and he didn't deserve to deal with a captain who locked himself in the cabin and stared at a square of folded silk. I'm sorry, Andal. It just hits me sometimes. The quartermaster looked down at his hands. I had a woman I was close to once. Not a wife. She died. Imperial troops pacifying a rebellious city quarter. I was a Luminian pilgrim at the time, so I could have stopped it. But I got home 6 minutes too late. 6 minutes, Calder. Just in time to clean up the blood. Calder stared at Andal. The man was full of lessons, advice, and dry wit, but he'd never said two words about his life before. Calder knew more about the Lyathatan's personal history than Andal's. That's how I ended up where I am. And this is my way of saying that I know where you are. If time doesn't heal wounds, it certainly makes them hurt less. Calder looked back at the unborn dress. And what about revenge? Does that help? You mean the Emperor? Andal shrugged. I blamed him for years. I planned out 3 assassination attempts, though I never tried them, thank the god. I'd have never gotten past the most drunken guard in the capital. But when I heard he was dead, it didn't help at all. He looked at Calder for a few seconds. I doubt yours will help either. If Shara hadn't attacked us, Jerry would still be alive. And it was more than that. It was Shara's eyes when she fought. Dead. Cold. As though she didn't care about anything or anyone, and that made it easy for her. If she had murdered Jerry in a fit of anger, or in self-defense, or in the heat of the moment, he would have understood. It wouldn't have been any easier for him, but at least the picture would make sense. But assassinating a stranger because she got in the way, staying stone cold the whole time, that deserved retribution. No one like that deserved to live. Calder realized he wasn't making much sense even to himself, but that didn't matter to him at the moment. If you hadn't let Naberius on board this ship, the consultant would never have come here, Andal pointed out. If you and Jairine had never met, she wouldn't have been on the ship. And if a falling star had blown the whole ship to smithereens, none of us would have been alive to realize that there was an assassin on board. You know that's not the same. Andal looked up at the boards over his head. One part of it is true. We should never have let Naberius on board this ship. I didn't know that at the time. I was suspicious. You were suspicious. Looking back, that should have been enough. Andal held up a hand. I'm not blaming you, understand? I'm blaming him. Calder nodded slowly, remembering Naberius clutching at the heart, Naberius shooting Tristania in the back of the head, smiling afterward. It's too late now, Andal. All that's left is taking him ashore and getting paid. Andal leaned closer.
It's not too late, sir. I've been talking to the crew of the Eternal, and they told me what's happening. A meeting between you, Captain Bennett, Naberius, and his sponsors.
If you're asking, I don't know who the sponsors are either. Cheska said it was a surprise.
More surprises, Andal said, voice dry. Captain, let's be done with him. Negotiate a partial fee. Leave Naberius with Captain Bennett, and we'll be on our way.
Cheska was withholding information to manipulate him, and he knew that, but Calder still couldn't deny a certain intrigue. Who were Naberius' sponsors? How were they planning on crowning a new emperor once they got their hands on the heart of Nakuthi? Especially considering... He glanced at the box underneath the bed. It remained untouched, the secret card up his sleeve. The sight reminded him of why he was really here. The reason Jerry had traveled with him all these years. He rose to his feet, pulling a coat out of the chest. Anything would do. It wasn't what he wore that would make an impression on these people, but the way he acted. It's not just about money, Andal. I'm aiming higher than that. Naberius is involved in something as big as the Empire itself, and I would be a fool to let this chance go by. He paused. But I would be just as much a fool to trust him. So you're coming with me. Andal's face gave nothing away.
Did they give you permission for that?
You may have noticed that I don't often ask for permission. He shook himself, rolling his shoulders, shedding his weakness and leaving it on the deck. He needed to show strength at a meeting like this. He met his quartermaster's eyes and spoke firmly. You know where I'm heading, Andal, in the end.
I do.
Andal's eyes took on a haunted cast.
I don't know that I could forget. And are you still with me?
Andal stood up from the bench, executing a perfect bow at the waist. His silver pendant swung freely.
To the end, sir.
Calder gathered the rest of his clothes, laying them on the bed. Naberius has one more chance. After that, we're playing our own game. If there was one feeling that Calder knew with intimate familiarity, it was the sudden panic of finding himself in over his head. The result of his lifestyle, he supposed. He had spent much of his life leaping off ledges without looking. It was only natural that a few of those ledges would turn out to be cliffs. So when he and Andal marched into the main cabin of the Eternal, only to find four guildheads sitting there, watching him enter, he was almost comforted. One of his choices had put him in boiling hot water, so everything was right with the universe. The majority of the main cabin was taken up by a long, oval table made of the same reddish wood as the rest of the ship. Cheska sat at the far end, the head of the table, still in the same gold-trimmed blue suit and wide hat. Calder had been in this room before, and it was still impressive to him that her ship was big enough for a main cabin. The room looked bigger than his entire hold, and it was lit entirely by soft yellow quick lamps. To her right sat a woman Calder had earnestly prayed never to see again, General and Head of the Imperial Guard, Gerilis Teach. It had been 10 years since he'd seen her last, but she didn't look a day older. Her hair was still shaved so close to the skull that it seemed colorless, and her icy blue eyes held no hint of weakness. As always, she wore her full red and black plate armor, with that horrible sword over one shoulder. He didn't let his eyes rest on the black hilt for too long, lest he spoil everyone's formal dress with a spray of vomit. A man sat on Cheska's left, and though Calder had never met him personally, everyone knew him by reputation. Mackenzie Maxius, one of the most prominent instructors at the capital's Imperial Academy, wore a mask of polished black wood that almost blended into his Heartlander skin. His flame-charred staff rested against the table, close to hand. The head of the Magister's Guild inclined his mask forward to regard Calder. He didn't say a word, so Calder extended his senses to see if he could check the mood of the man's intent. Nothing. That was alarming. Though it was hard to read anything without physical contact, Calder could usually get a whiff of intent through the air, especially from other powerful readers. But Maxius gave off no more impression than a stone. It was a cold reminder for Calder, who was used to being the most skilled reader around. Here was a reader with more talent, training, and experience than anyone Calder had ever met, save the Emperor himself. Anything Calder did, this man could undo. He wasn't planning on causing a problem at this meeting, but Calder made a mental note not to allow a spark of hostility in himself. Maxius would read it immediately. The fourth guild head was, of course, an old friend. Bliss cocked her head to one side, examining Calder curiously. Here was another person who didn't seem to age. In fact, she might actually look younger than the last time he'd seen her. Pale eyes, pale skin, and white blonde hair made her look like a ghost, especially in contrast to her long black coat that covered her from neck to ankles. A line of silver buttons down the middle glinted in the lamplight, each etched with a Black Watch crest. Something inside that coat squirmed, and she pushed it down absently. In spite of himself, Calder shivered. Ulsa stood behind Bliss, arms locked behind her back. She nodded to Calder when he entered, but said nothing. This was not his mother, but a Black Watch commander on duty. The one other member of their assembly was Nabarius Claiborne, again wearing his original eye-catching red suit. He had recovered every scrap of his poise, and once again looked like a dark-haired hero. His case of candles sat on the table to his right, unopened. That was everyone in the room. Other than Bliss, none of the guildheads had bothered to bring an attendant. It occurred to him now that Andal's presence would look like a gesture of insecurity, as if he needed backup. Calder stood for a long, awkward moment, adjusting his jacket. It was tight across the shoulders and it itched, while he tried to decide what to do. He had expected influential figures in the Empire, but not four guildheads. Jessica, maybe Bliss, and a couple of clerks from the palace. He'd known that Nabarius was into something big, but he hadn't realized exactly how big until this exact moment. Out of sight of the table, Andal nudged Calder with his elbow. He turned his stumble forward into a walk, sliding onto the round bench that encircled the table. The seat looked as though it had grown from the deck. Bliss slowly raised a hand and waved to Calder.
I am pleased to see you again, Calder Martin. I hear your wife has been kidnapped or possibly killed.
At the head of the table, Cheska sighed. Ulsa stiffened but said nothing. You belong here, Calder reminded himself. They're not above you. Except, for the moment, they were. But the reminder helped him, and he managed to give Bliss a sad smile. That's true. I'm afraid she's dead. The leader of the Black Watch Guild tilted her head the other way.
You imply that you have some information suggesting that she is dead, beyond her kidnapping. What makes you think that?
Maxius cleared his throat and spoke in the resonating voice of a trained orator.
Lady Bliss, I think it would be appropriate if—
Bliss cut him off by raising a finger to her lips.
Shh! It's not your turn yet.
She nodded to Calder.
Please, continue.
Maxius massaged his temple with one hand. Keeping one wary eye on the Magister, Calder answered.
The consultant assassin, Shara, she said that Jairine was— that she had been killed.
And she had a reason to tell you the truth.
She didn't have a reason to lie, Calder thought, but he gave the matter a little more thought. If they were actually keeping Jerry alive, why would the consultant tell him that? Wouldn't it be safer if she lied about it? No matter what the truth was, she had no reason to tell him anything except that his wife was gone. It was thin, but it made him feel better than he had in 3 weeks.
No, she did not, he said at last.
Bliss settled back in her chair. Though she didn't smile, her manner somehow conveyed satisfaction. Cheska took the opportunity to control the meeting, leaning forward with her elbows on the table.
You need any introductions, Calder?
He shook his head.
Guildheads, Nabarius, this is Calder Martin, one of my navigators and formerly of the Black Watch. Behind him is his quartermaster, Andal Petronas, who is on my ship for reasons known only to him and his Luminian god.
Calder glanced over his shoulder to see Andal's reaction. Unsurprisingly, he gave none. He simply nodded at his introduction and then stood with his arms behind his back in imitation of Ulsa.
Formerly of the Black Watch, Maxius asked.
He turned his mask to Bliss.
I was under the impression that your guild did not give up its members easily. What did he do?
Calder opened his mouth to answer for himself, but the head of the Imperial Guard responded first.
Destruction of Imperial property, she recited. Conspiracy to free prisoners, theft of the Emperor's personal belongings, abuse of guild privileges to commit crimes.
He couldn't see how Maxius reacted to the news through the man's mask, but Cheska gave a low whistle.
You know, when you hear it all spelled out like that, it's actually pretty impressive.
She tipped her hat to Calder, and he responded in kind. Geralis Teach's expression got, if possible, even colder. At times like this, it was hard not to like Cheska. Nabarius rapped his knuckles on the table, drawing attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, pardon me for interrupting, but we do have business of a somewhat urgent nature to discuss.
Not so urgent, Cheska said. They have almost a 2-day head start.
He flashed her a smile.
I'm sorry, Guildhead. I assumed a navigator ship was still fast enough to overtake them.
That's why it isn't urgent.
She waved a hand in concession.
But let's get it over with anyway. They got the heart. What do we do now?
We can follow it, given time, Maxius said. I am merely concerned about the fate of the heart within that time frame. To what use will the consultants put an artifact of Nekothi?
Who knows,
Cheska muttered. Geralis leaned forward.
I am acquainted with 2 of the 3 currently ruling architects in the Consultants Guild, as well as this assassin herself. They will not try and use the heart at all. They'll try to destroy it.
Is negotiation an option? Maxius suggested.
Calder, for one, doubted it. If the consultants were open to negotiation, they wouldn't have started by sending an assassin for their opposition. Cheska evidently agreed.
With what leverage? She asked. We can't threaten to ban them because they're not using our guilds in the first place. I have no idea how they're traveling the Aeon so quickly without a navigator, but Kelerak knows they're not using my ships. And we can't threaten war because we can't actually wage a war against the consultants and the alchemists combined. They could buy everyone at this table twice over.
Bliss was staring straight up at the ceiling, so it was a surprise when she spoke.
Nathaniel Boreas will do everything he can to avoid a war. Peace is good for business. But the consultants prosper in wartime, so it stands to reason that their goals will be different.
There is an opening there, Maxius mused, if we can use it.
Nabarius gave a forced laugh.
I'm sorry, but this is like fighting a duel assuming you'll die. We haven't discussed the possibility of recovering the heart before it makes it back to the Grey Island.
Maxius' mask turned to the chronicler.
As I said before, witness Nabarius, it takes time to trace such a faint residue as the heart of Nekothi leaves. By that time, the consultants will already have control of the artifact.
Calder thought of Urzaya's promise.
I have tasted her blood.
He could track the blonde consultant, Shara's partner, wherever they went. It wasn't Shara herself, nor was it the heart, but it could be the best lead they had. He kept the knowledge to himself. When you had the highest card at the table, it was best to keep it close as long as you could. His father had taught him that.
The head of the Navigator's Guild must be good for something, Nabarius said. Surely we have enough ships between us to search. We know where they're headed. If we can overtake them before they reach the Grey Island, then it's our victory.
Calder's eyes whipped to Cheska. He didn't know how she treated people who spoke to her in that tone, because no one did. He wouldn't be surprised to see her pin Nabarius' hand to the table with a dagger. But she did nothing. She obviously noticed, her mouth tightened to a grim line and her eyes smoldered, but she kept quiet. Who was Nabarius for Cheska to show him respect? Calder had only known the man for a few weeks, but he didn't seem so impressive.
The consultants would retaliate,
Teach put in. Maxius nodded to her, recognizing the point.
Even if we were to recover the heart, it would not immediately result in success. Nabarius, how long would it take you to awaken and bond the heart?
Wait a second. Nabarius gave a self-satisfied smile.
On that front, I have good news. I began the process on the island, and I believe I can do it very quickly. 1 hour, maybe two.
The Magister's shock was obvious.
So fast, it can take years for a soulbound to bond a vessel, especially a vessel with which he has had only brief contact. How did you do it?
It's difficult to put into words, but this heart seemed to conform itself to my intent. It could be due to personal compatibility or due to my own long proximity to the Emperor.
Geralis Teach rolled her eyes but said nothing.
It's almost as though the heart was made to bond with a human.
Bliss's stretch of bench was empty, and her voice came from under the table.
Or perhaps it wants to be bonded.
The table fell quiet at that, but Calder couldn't stay silent. They wanted Nabarius to bond with the heart? He pointed at the chronicler, unable to contain his disbelief.
You want him?
Far from being insulted, Nabarius looked flattered, as though Calder's doubt was the exact reaction he had hoped for.
Cheska sighed.
None of us can take over. Guild politics, and he's got the keys to the Imperial Palace treasury.
Not to mention a significant fortune of my own, Nabarius said, smiling. It does have the potential to bond the heart, Maxius said, and it was surprisingly difficult for us to find anyone remotely qualified to take the position, even if we wanted to give it away. It seems that no one wants the job.
No one wants to be the Emperor, Calder spat out. Bliss's head popped up from under the table.
I, for one, don't care who the Emperor is, but we need one, and soon.
Teach nodded.
Without an Emperor, the Imperial Guard will eventually fall apart. The Regents are doing what they can, but they are no substitute for a true Emperor. And one and all, the four of them have refused the position. If something is not done soon, the entire Empire will tear itself to pieces.
Cheska jerked a thumb in Nabarius' direction.
That leaves him. He's got friends in every guild. He's a reader. He knows exactly how the government works from personal experience, and he has lots and lots of money. Easy choice if you're asking me.
Calder tugged at his ill-fitting jacket, trying to process his thoughts.
And what about the other side? The consultants? Who do they want to be emperor?
Teach scowled, not at him, but at the world in general.
They would prefer no emperor. A world of anarchy must look like a haven for a band of spies and assassins.
Cheska rapped her knuckles on the table.
Okay, that's enough. We'll try it your way, Mr. Emperor, sir. All ships in the area spread out and search for the consultants. In the meantime, Calder will take Nabarius and head straight for the Grey Island, where he will wait for orders, in case we find the heart elsewhere.
Why him?
Teach asked. This one, Calder could answer for himself. Over long distances, the Testament is the fastest ship in the Guild. I can continue in a straight line regardless of wind or tide. It's possible that if I head straight for the Grey Island, I could overtake them myself. Cheska turned to Nabarius.
You okay staying with him, your Imperial Highness?
Nabarius smiled his wide, spotless smile.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Chapter 15 Awakening is a poorly understood process, though it is the method by which we create all our soulbound and many of our most powerful weapons. The brightest minds in the Empire know very little about the nature of awakened objects. So please, I beg you, do not attempt to awaken anything without the direct supervision of myself or your mother. Archer Belfry, Imperial Witness. Taken from a letter to his pupil, Calder Martin, 14 years of age. 11 years ago. The reception room of Candle Bay Imperial Prison was just as Calder remembered it. Small, cramped, and decorated almost entirely in white. The receptionist's desk took up most of the wall, and there were no chairs for guests, only stools. Small, three-legged, wobbly stools. It was as though the whole room had been designed to make visitors as uncomfortable as possible. Ulsa had offered to accompany him today, and Jerry had positively begged. But Calder had asked them both to stay at home. The support would have been welcome,
but he hadn't seen his father in the better part of 2 years. The last time they'd seen each other was during a burglary. Calder wanted to speak freely. The receptionist, a young woman with a dazzling smile, noticed him as soon as he walked in the door.
Calder Martin, is it?
I've been here twice a month for the past year and a half, Calder said flatly. He'd stopped being polite to this woman almost a year ago. She didn't lose her smile.
Your name is Calder Martin, correct?
He ground his teeth. That's correct.
The prisoner will be available to see you at 3 p.m,
the receptionist said sweetly.
Until that time, why don't you relax?
Calder glanced at the clock. 2 minutes until 3.
Why don't we pass the time getting to know each other?
He asked, suddenly as friendly as she was. He hadn't cracked her facade in all of his previous visits, but who knew? Maybe this was the time.
What is your name?
I'm sorry, sir, but we are not permitted to divulge personal information during our hours of business.
She grinned as though pleased to have answered his question so thoroughly. He wasn't wearing his watchman's coat today, but he found that he missed the weight of the 7 nails hanging over his chest. If he had them to hand, he'd be tempted to see if this receptionist had a brain, heart, and spine in addition to her 4 limbs.
Tell me, what do you do outside your hours of business?
She cocked her head as if confused at the question.
During business hours, I am here at the facility. When the facility does not require my assistance, I am asleep.
He broadened his grin to match hers.
Why, that sounds thrilling. Do you suppose the weather will continue, or do you think the sun will blacken and shrivel up?
The receptionist's smile suggested he'd just told a joke.
I have no opinion on the subject.
That was her favorite line. I have no opinion on the subject. If he had a mark for every time he'd heard that from her during his previous visits, he'd be changing them to gold marks soon.
No opinion, I see. If I were to strip and dance naked on your desk, would you have an opinion?
Her smile didn't shrink by a single tooth.
I would be forced to call security in that instant, sir.
Calder stopped. It was useless. He stood and let the remaining seconds until 3 o'clock drip by. She smiled the whole time. At precisely 3 p.m, she rose from her chair and beckoned him back through a simple white door.
This way, sir.
As he passed through the door, Calder couldn't help but wonder.
Is this the censor? Do they know I'm a reader? They know my name, they might know anyway.
But nothing obvious happened. No crimson quicklamp came flaring to life. No guards rang a bell to sound the alarm. The floor didn't dissolve beneath him. The receptionist led him down several boring hallways. At first, he tried to focus on memorizing her route, but he quickly realized that it wasn't necessary. The floor was polished stone, the walls wooden, and after a few turns, he came to realize that the whole facility was a square grid. She might as well have handed him a map. The whole time, he watched every doorframe and stretch of ceiling, looking for something that might indicate a reader-detecting trap. He saw nothing, heard nothing, and felt nothing. When they finally reached his father's cell, the receptionist handed him a beaten copper bell.
I will come to collect you at 4 o'clock. If you wish to depart before that time, or if you notice any unusual behavior in the prisoner, please ring that bell. A member of the facility staff will come to assist you as quickly as possible.
With one more beaming smile, the receptionist bowed out of the room. The heavy cell door clanged shut behind him, but Calder hardly noticed. He was with his father again. Roderick Martin looked much healthier than Calder had imagined. His red beard was neatly trimmed, his hair combed. His crimson one-piece prison uniform seemed tailored to fit.
Come to think of it, is this really a cell?
The room wasn't pristine, but it looked like a home. The bed had a quilt on it, and a writing desk sat in the corner, piled with books. There was a small quick lamp bolted to the wall, with a pull cord to activate and deactivate it.
I think you're living better than I am,
Calder said, laughing weakly. His palms were wet, his heart racing. Roderick smiled broadly, leaning back in his chair.
Yes, I suspect I am. Better than I ever did on the street, I'm sure.
This time, they laughed together.
How are they treating you here?
Calder asked, waving his hand to encompass the facility behind him.
Is everything okay?
Roderick chuckled.
Well, better than okay. Regular meals, plenty to read, excellent medical care. I feel better than I have in my entire life.
Calder relaxed. Suddenly, the whole plan to break him out of prison seemed silly, like a child's game.
When the receptionist had turned him away so many times, he had invented dark and ominous reasons, creating a fiction that his mind was more than willing to accept. The whole time, his father had been up here reading and exercising. Calder sat back on the bed, facing his father.
I've been living with Mother, you know.
Roderick didn't seem surprised. Calder supposed someone in the prison must have told him.
I'm glad to hear it, son. She's a wonderful woman. Everything is going well for you, then.
Prison must have done a miracle on his father to have him calling also wonderful. At most, he would have grudgingly called her professional.
As well as can be expected, Calder said. I found a new job. I'm a watchman now, with the Black Watch. You know, the guild.
This was the news he had most dreaded breaking to his father. Roderick hated the guilds, didn't trust them, and the Black Watch was the most suspicious of all. But this new Roderick, softened by prison, might actually be pleased. And pleased he was. He positively beamed at his son.
Such good news. You've got such a promising career at such a young age. And you'll be able to serve the Emperor, the light and life of our empire.
Calder examined his father carefully, searching for any sign of irony.
You approve, then?
Of course. A good, steady income and a chance to serve the Emperor is all I could want for my son.
Something was wrong here. Were they being watched? Was that why his father was playing the good Imperial citizen all of a sudden? He lowered his voice, just in case.
Father, you were the one who said the Empire would be better off eating itself alive than dying slowly under this elder-spawned excuse for a ruler.
Roderick chuckled again.
That doesn't sound like me.
Calder's suspicions bloomed to full-blown alarm. Reaching out to the reading desk, he placed his hand on the stack of books.
Roderick is in pain. He's sweating. The walls are closing in, and he has to escape. Maybe if he uses the book, he can break the window and leap into the bay. Break window. Break!
Calder jerked his hand away, already gasping for breath at the brief contact. Roderick peered at him, brow furrowed in worry.
Are you feeling all right, son? We could call a doctor. They have an excellent medical staff here, you know.
He grabbed the quilt.
Roderick twists the quilt in his fists, braiding it into a rope. If he kills himself quickly, they won't be able to hurt him anymore. No more shots, he silently begs. Kill me quickly.
His father's pain and fear blazed in Calder, burning away his doubts and worries for himself.
2 days ago,
he began, suddenly resolute,
I was working out in the harbor. I saw at least 5 prisoners open a window and plunge to their deaths on the rocks below. Why would they do that, father?
Roderick's smile suddenly looked as though it had been painted on, as fake as the receptionist's.
How should I know, son?
Calder pointed at the window overlooking Candle Bay.
If I opened that window, would you jump out?
His father froze.
You can't open that window, Calder. It doesn't open. It never opens.
Calder walked over and placed his hands on the window as though to open it.
I'm a reader, remember? I can open it, but only if you want me to. Only if you want to jump out. Do you? Do you want to jump out?
Roderick choked out a single word past a frozen, paralyzed smile.
Yes.
Calder gathered his father into an embrace, fighting back tears. At that moment, if he could have planted an alchemical charge and blown the whole prison to rubble, he would have lit the fuse with a smile on his face. Hesitantly, weakly, Roderick wrapped his arms around his son. The cell door was locked, but Calder opened it anyway. 2 security guards hurried down the hall as he walked away, but he ignored them and they ran past, inspecting the door to see what had gone wrong with the lock. Roderick didn't make a fuss or try to escape. In fact, Calder heard him chatting pleasantly with the guards from back in his cell. When he reached the receptionist, he placed the copper bell back on her desk.
I found my own way back.
That was against facility procedure, she said, smiling.
Calder placed both hands on the desk and leaned forward until he was almost nose to nose with her. He expected her to back up. She didn't.
I have a hypothetical situation for you. What if, When I came back, I burned this place to the ground.
Her smile didn't crack.
In that case, I would be forced to call security.
Suddenly, the whole scene twisted in his mind. The smiling receptionist became the receptionist who had to smile. She literally couldn't make any other expression.
What did they do to you?
He asked, hoping for a frown, for an expression of confusion to break through her mask. The smile remained, strong and steady.
We have excellent medical care at this facility.
Calder nodded. He had expected nothing else. Maybe that was just another scripted response, or maybe she had been trying to tell him what happened in her own way. It didn't matter, he supposed. If he got to choose, he would leave this prison as nothing more than a hole in the ground. It didn't deserve to exist. Chapter 16. Present Day. Alsa stood on the outside of the table, watching the meeting between the guild heads, the future emperor, and her son. It wasn't her place to speak. She was meant to keep an eye on Bliss and to translate for her if she said anything particularly strange. But it was getting harder and harder to keep her peace. Why wasn't Bliss saying anything else? Nabarius, in his red suit, rose to his feet and bowed toward the door.
Well, Captain Martin, quartermaster, I'm sure you have many preparations to make. Please, don't let me keep you.
Andal was a difficult man to read, but Alsa knew him well enough to notice the way his mouth tightened. He didn't like Nabarius, and he wasn't happy with being dismissed. That attitude would not serve him if Nabarius actually did ascend to the throne. Calder, on the other hand, smiled widely.
Of course,
he dipped his head toward each member of the council in turn.
Guildheads, Nabarius, Mother.
She had stayed quiet long enough. Alsa opened her mouth to speak, but found that Bliss had twisted around on her bench to stare her Blackwatch commander in the eyes. Alsa hesitated, and then Calder was gone. Nabarius continued, turning to Cheska.
Captain Bennett, you have served us well as host. Now, I have a few tasks for you.
She folded her arms.
Do you now?
Trust me. I don't have you doing anything that you wouldn't do on your own. First, you must...
While the chronicler spoke, Alsa leaned down to speak in her guild head's ear.
Why didn't you tell him? I implied that his wife may be alive and that he should check for himself. I'm sure he got the message. You did not tell him that there is a member of the Sleepless on that island making void transmissions to the rest of the cult. It's almost certainly Jirene.
Bliss drifted her hand through the air as though she were tracing invisible waves.
It's all implied. With all due respect, Guildhead, no, it isn't. Is it not? I will look for an opportunity to clarify, then.
Nabarius was still talking to Cheska. The navigator didn't seem too happy. Alsa had seen her smile while throwing a man overboard, and now she was scowling. Everyone was far enough away from the two watchmen that they shouldn't overhear, and they probably wouldn't bother listening to Alsa anyway, but she lowered her voice to be so quiet that Bliss might have trouble hearing her from an inch away.
And what about Nabarius? He's obviously in thrall to Nakothi.
Bliss raised a single finger into the air, staring at it as though it contained all the secrets of the universe.
Not in thrall. Not yet. Close to it, though. That's worse than the old Emperor. With him, we would have had a few years left. But now what? Weeks? Anyone on the throne is better than no one,
Bliss said simply.
If he can stall the elders for a week, that's a week we didn't have before. We can always replace him. Unless they finish the process, and he's all they need. Don't be silly. Nabarius isn't strong enough for that.
The future emperor had fallen silent, and Cheska was missing from the room. Bliss, of course, hadn't bothered to lower her voice. The whole room heard what she'd said. Alsa resisted the urge to cover her face with a hand, instead straightening her coat and trying to look as disciplined as possible. Nabarius' handsome smile had an edge to it.
Commander Greyweather, I'm sure you'd like to have a few words with your son before he returns to his ship. You're dismissed.
A perfect opportunity. Now Alsa could warn Calder about Nabarius and about the void transmission from the island. She bowed to Nabarius and turned to walk out of the room. A small, pale hand rested on her arm.
I'd rather she stay,
Bliss said softly. It could be frustrating working directly with Bliss. The guild head often decided to follow whatever whim popped into her head without reason or explanation, and Ulsa was simply expected to adapt. So, for a moment, Ulsa couldn't see past her irritation. She had just explained that she needed to talk to Calder. It was even guild business. Nabarius had handed her this chance on a platter, and now Bliss didn't want her to leave? Then Ulsa noticed something. Geralis Teach and Mackenzie Maxius were staying at the table as though they had no intention of moving. Nabarius was dismissing the people he didn't need. What business did he have to discuss with three of his four supporting guild heads and no one else? Maybe this was one of those occasions where Bliss actually did know what she was doing. Nabarius clapped his hands together.
Right then, General Teach, would you remove Commander Greyweather from the room?
Teach hesitated, looking to the Black Watch head. Bliss smiled just a little.
I'd rather she stay.
General Teach turned back to her future emperor, her spine ramrod straight in her seat.
I will do as you command, but if the guildhead resists, then this whole ship will be in danger.
Nabarius' smile had vanished, and he gestured to Maxius.
It's two against one. That won't matter if we're all at the bottom of the ocean, the Magister said.
Bliss began tracing designs on the table with her finger, doodling invisible figure eights. A bead of sweat traced its way down Ulsa's cheek. If three guild heads came to blows, Teach was right. The ship wouldn't survive. Even the Testament, anchored 24 yards away, would be in danger. She had to make sure that didn't happen, even if it meant playing into Nabarius' hand by missing the meeting. But Bliss wanted her there. She was spared the decision when Nabarius threw up his hands.
Fine, then. Commander Greyweather can stay. It would have been easier for all of us had she cooperated, but it's no matter. Make sure she stays under control.
Ulsa's stomach sank. There were only a few reasons she could think of that Nabarius wouldn't want her specifically to hear the contents of this meeting, and most of them revolved around Calder. Sure enough, Nabarius adopted a commanding pose, leaning one hand on the table and pointing the other at the general.
Load as many guards on the Testament as you can. Round up the crew and execute them.
Ulsa's stomach was sucked into the void and it left her feeling empty. She had been separated away from Calder for half of his life and spent much of the remaining half angry with him. But this was her son, and it made no sense. Maxius adjusted his mask, uncomfortable.
Why wait until the captain is aboard his ship?
I agree, Teach said. Make this an official execution, and let me take care of it now.
Nabarius' fists tightened.
If you plan on following my orders in the future, then this would be an excellent time to start. I don't trust Captain Bennett any more than Captain Martin. I remind you all that she is a soulbound, and we are all riding on her vessel. It seems to me that she will put the pieces together when she sees us gunning down her ally, Maxius said. And what will she do then? Rescue their corpses?
Nabarius waved a hand through the air.
I've given her an explanation and orders that will prevent her from acting until it's too late. We can clarify afterwards.
General Teach glowered at the table.
I will keep Captain Bennett under control, but I don't like risking you in this.
She turned her glare on Nabarius.
Let them sail off alone, and I will follow on my wind watcher. I can kill them all in a day or two.
Ulsa's instincts screamed for her to pull her saber and cut her way free from the room, but she would die before her sword cleared its sheath. Instead, she spoke.
Please, I must know why.
The chronicler looked to Bliss as if to say,
You see, this is why I wanted her to leave. He has proven repeatedly that he will not follow me or my orders, and I suspect he will turn on me as soon as circumstances allow. I'm minimizing a risk.
We need him,
Ulsa said. If she could establish some sort of camaraderie with this uncrowned emperor, maybe she could get him to listen.
We don't need him. We need his ship, Nabarius corrected, and I can take control of it. That's why I can't let them stay a day or two out, General Teach. That ship might well pack up and swim away.
Ulsa looked from him to the Magister.
Can he do that? He has to bond the heart if this plan is to work. He can't do that and take control of the Testament, can he?
It's technically possible, Maxius allowed, but it would be unspeakably difficult, and I can't imagine it taking less than 2 weeks.
Nabarius wore a confident smile like a mask. You must learn to trust me, Maxius. I can do things that no one else can. The Magister shrugged. If he believes he can do it, then I have no further objection, though this seems extreme. I would think the easiest course would be to simply pay Captain Martin and let him do his job.
Finally, Alsa thought, a reasonable voice.
But Nabarius turned to the Magister with a sympathetic, condescending look that dashed her hopes to pieces.
Mackenzie, my friend, you have to trust me. I've spent the last 3 weeks on that man's ship. I have read every inch, every board on that vessel, and I have done my best to get to know the captain. No matter what he says, no matter what he may tell himself, there is absolutely no chance that he will ever follow my leadership. He simply doesn't have it in him. I believe he thinks of himself as a rival of sorts. No, he has to go.
Reluctantly, Professor Maxius nodded. General Teach actually seemed soothed by the chronicler's speech. With her concerns addressed, she rose from her seat and marched over to the door, armor clanking with every step. She leaned ahead out of the cracked door, speaking softly to one of her guards. Alsa slumped back against the hull, despair settling over her like a cold blanket. Maybe she ought to fight for it anyway. It was worse knowing what was going to happen and being unable to stop it than trying to stop it and failing. On her way back to the bench, Teach stopped in front of Alsa. In a rare display of humanity, she placed a gauntleted hand on Alsa's shoulder.
I'm sorry you were here for this, Greyweather. I will make it painless.
Tears welled up in Alsa's eyes, and she nodded. Sad to say, but those were the most touching words she'd ever heard out of the general's mouth. Nabarius straightened his red coat, adjusting the buttons, and then picked up his case of candles.
Well, I'd better keep an eye on my ship. Ladies, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, as always.
General Teach pushed her way out the door, and Nabarius swept out behind her without another word. Maxius sighed and leaned back in his chair.
I'm very sorry, Greyweather, is it? You should not have been allowed to hear that.
In spite of herself, Alsa agreed. It was normally her policy to face unpleasant truths head-on rather than hiding in denial, but today, if there was nothing she could do to save her son, then what was the point of knowing about it? She would have to ask her guild head. The thought of Bliss sent a shock of possibility through her. She was an unreliable ally, but a powerful one. She might be able to turn this situation around. She was missing from her seat at the bench, but that wasn't unusual. Alsa leaned over, calling under the table.
Guildhead, please, we need to leave now.
Not you, Maxius corrected, sounding regretful. I'm sorry, but I must ask you to stay here with me for the time being.
Alsa's fist tightened on the grip of her sword until her knuckles flared with pain. The Magister could probably reduce her to ashes with a thought, if the rumors were true, but he was still only one man.
Maybe if she were fast enough,
he sighed through his mask.
Please, don't make me subdue you. It's difficult to do so gently.
Alsa gestured under the table.
Can Bliss leave, at least?
I have no orders to the contrary.
Alsa screamed under the table, a normally unforgivable breach in propriety.
Guildhead, come out of there now!
Nothing. Not a sound. She dropped to her knees, searching as if for a small child. There was no one under the table. She straightened, glancing to every corner of the room. Slowly, a smile crawled across her face. The Magister's mask tilted.
What is it?
Where's Bliss?
She asked softly. Maxius looked under the table himself, and Alsa took her opportunity. She vaulted over the table, saber clearing its sheath. One of the Magister's hands shot out for his burnt staff, but he was too slow. She landed with her knees on the table, lunging with one foot and kicking the dark wood out of his reach. With the other hand, she pressed the point of her sword against the underside of his chin.
I'm sorry, Professor, but I must ask you to stay here with me until my son's ship has departed.
Fair enough,
the Magister said calmly, raising both hands.
I sympathize with you, Greyweather, I really do, but this is rash.
I hope Bliss is using this time well, she thought.
If the guild head strolled back through this door and asked what was going on, also was going to do her very best to kill the woman. Until then, she silently begged Bliss, "Save my son." Calder and Andal sat on the benches of a rowboat, surrounded by Imperial guards. Calder was having a hard time relaxing. For one thing, the last time he'd been surrounded by the guards, it had ended in a trial. The time before that, in an arrest. He had some unresolved issues. But he had a hard time imagining anyone comfortable surrounded by such a menagerie. One of the rowers had red-scaled arms with spikes protruding from the elbows. Another had the reverse-jointed legs of a lion and furry ears high up on her head. A thin, pale man in a guard's uniform stared endlessly at Calder, his eyes solid blue-white like a pair of full moons. A gaze like that could unnerve a champion. Andal leaned in, speaking quietly. The guards could probably still hear him, but every little bit of secrecy helped.
"We're leaving as soon as we raise sails, right?"
"As soon as Nabarius is on board, yes."
"I see. You want him to walk the plank. Old-fashioned, but I can see the appeal."
A guardswoman with a lashing tail glared at Andal, but the quartermaster returned her gaze evenly.
"He wants us to go to the Grey Island and wait," Calder said. "That's where we want to go anyway. We've effectively received Imperial permission to do exactly what we want. Why complain?"
"Because he will inevitably see us all dead.
So long as he starts with you, I will consider myself the winner."
The shadow of the Testament loomed over them as the Leviathan's shadow writhed beneath the water. The red-armed guard looked over the edge and shuddered, backing deeper into the boat. Well, it looked like Calder could do his share of intimidating. Someone tossed a rope ladder down over the side, and Calder gripped it, pulling himself up the hull.
"Is that you, Foster?" he called up.
The head that leaned over the edge was covered in quills.
"Pleased to meet you, ma'am."
The porcupine woman backed up, unamused. What was the Imperial Guard doing on his ship? When he reached the deck, he realized there weren't just a few guards. The deck was crawling with red and black uniforms and mismatched body parts. He spotted Foster up in the crow's nest, clutching a pair of muskets to his chest like a miser hoarding coins.
"What's going on here, Foster?"
"You tell me, Captain," Foster shouted back. "They tried to take my guns."
"Not very hard,"
one of the guards muttered, crossing two pairs of arms. Calder grabbed that man by the shoulder, stopping him.
"Excuse me, guardsman, what is going on here?"
"The future emperor is boarding," the guard said simply. "We have to make sure this ship is secure."
Obsessive and suspicious, it seemed the Imperial Guard hadn't changed since the emperor's death.
"He's sailed here on this ship," Calder said. "If there were any danger on board, he would know it by now."
A lizard-tailed guardsman pushed past, bending to examine a perfectly innocent coil of rope.
"We're acting on orders, Captain. If you have a problem, I suggest you take it up with Lord Claiborne directly."
Andal had reached the deck by this point, and he looked no more pleased than Calder felt. And Calder didn't get any happier when the rest of the Imperial guards from the rowboat, which he had assumed were only escorts, climbed up the ladder after Andal. Calder walked over to the edge, peering down. Only a single guard remained in the boat, paddling back to the Eternal. A figure in a red suit emerged onto the deck, accompanied by a woman in red and black armor. If Nabarius was keeping the head of the Imperial Guard with him, he must be paranoid indeed. Since when had Nabarius been this concerned with his own security? He had taken a number of risks in this voyage already, including boarding this ship with no more protection than his own Silent One. He hadn't seemed nervous sharing the testament after he'd killed Tristania right in front of Calder. What did a man with such unassailable self-assurance need with an overwhelming number of guards? Calder answered his own question. The Imperial Guards were notoriously enthusiastic when it came to the Emperor's protection. Even the old Emperor, whom everyone had considered immortal, couldn't go anywhere without guards hovering over him. It must be worse for them when their charge was an ordinary mortal. Calder walked over to his cabin, where a scaled guard stood with thick arms folded.
"Excuse me, guardsman, that's my cabin.
Please stay on the deck until our inspection has concluded."
Spreading his empty hands, Calder smiled.
"I just need to change my clothes. I promise I won't delay you. This jacket has never fit well. 5 minutes and I'll be a new man."
The guard's eyes flicked over Calder's shoulder as though looking for permission. After a moment, the man stepped aside.
"Don't linger. We need all the crew on deck soon for inspection."
What do they expect to find? Calder wondered, shaking his head. He stepped into the cabin and peeled his ill-fitting jacket off as soon as possible. If he never wore the tight, itchy thing again, it would be too soon. He leaned over, flipping open his chest of clothes. Ordinarily, he could have just walked around without a jacket, but he suspected he would need every scrap of dignity and authority he could muster with Nabarius and the Imperial Guard on his ship. There was a girl in the chest. Covered in a long black coat, with white blonde hair spilling down her back, Bliss lay curled on top of his piled clothes. How had she packed herself in there? It didn't look like there should be enough space with the lid closed. While he was still staring in disbelief, Bliss rose, stretching like a jack-in-the-box.
You should invest in a more comfortable storage chest,
she suggested.
You never know when someone might need to stow away.
Calder should have expected something like this as soon as he heard that Bliss was on her way. I tried to discourage stowaways, actually. She raked her fingers through her hair, smoothing it out.
Why?
I'm sorry, I don't have time to explain this. I need to return you to my mother.
I'll go back to Elsa Greyweather at some point in the future, but for now, I expect she would want me here.
Bliss stepped carefully from the chest, one black boot at a time. When she was finally free, she began to stretch out her cramped legs.
She wanted me to tell you that we intercepted a void transmission from the Grey Island shortly before the Children of the Dead Mother attacked you.
Maybe if Calder had been a member of the Black Watch for longer, he would have some idea what a void transmission was. I apologize, Bliss, I don't know what that means.
It means there is at least one member of the Sleepless in the care of the Consultants. And she contacted her comrades recently, which means she is likely still alive.
She is likely still alive. He'd gone from certain his wife was dead to filled with painful hope in one night. This felt almost too good to be true, as though Bliss were setting him up for some huge disappointment. How do you know it didn't come from one of the Consultants?
Of all the guilds who might work under the influence of the Elders, the Consultants are among the least likely. Especially on that island, where they enjoy a certain protection. And they are culturally disinclined as well, according to many leading scholars on the subject.
Bliss had finished stretching. Now she was staring at the seamless wood beneath her. She prodded it with her foot, as though testing it to see if it would collapse. You think it's Jerry? The guildhead's implication was clear, but he had to be sure.
That's the most probable scenario. Though I also considered the idea that the Consultants are collecting Sleepless for some reason. That seems like it would be a timely coincidence, so I consider it less likely.
She sat down on the bed, her eyes now wandering over the cabin.
We rarely get to interrogate a member of the Sleepless. I would be interested in talking with your wife, should Jyrene survive.
She said it innocently, but Calder made a mental note not to hand Jerry over to the Black Watch under any circumstances. He would kill her himself before it came to that.
I would also like to visit the Grey Island,
Bliss said.
I get the impression that several forces will soon converge there, and I should be present for the sake of observation. Nabarius might not like it. Then again, he is not Emperor yet. Should I listen to his orders, I wonder?
Calder shivered at the thought of Bliss.